Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, Zach Ostrom here, IU Insider, Indianapolis Star. This is Mind Your Banners for Tuesday, January 24th, 2023. We're in the, I guess what Chronic would call the Mind Your Banners Studio South. He's not here. Across from me, Tyler Tagman. Tyler, say hello to everyone.
Hello to everyone.
There we go. When we talked to, let's see, when did we talk to Chronic? We talked to Chronic before the Illinois game. That was the last time Chronic and I sat down. So basically we got two games to review here. Obviously two very good games for Indiana. Good in different ways in the method, obviously in kind of the same way in the result. An 80-65 win against Illinois, an 82-69 win against Michigan State. And I think we can pick the bones out of, you know, these both of these performances, but the thing I keep coming back to really in all three of these games, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan State, obviously the margin of victory speaks for itself, but it's also the process. All of what Indiana's done here is repeatable. You know, Indiana is, I mean, there have even been some imperfections. I mean, they were only 17 of 40 on twos against Michigan State. They turned the ball over on almost 25% of possessions at Illinois. You know, it's not like they're playing really well, but it's not like they're playing at a level that it doesn't feel like they can sustain to win these games. And, you know, the turnaround from Penn State, Iowa and Northwestern were just, listen, they lost those two games by a combined 3 points. There were injuries. It was the Big Ten restart. But from Penn State in particular, the turnaround in what I know you and I have both talked about and written about, the toughness of this team, sort of the moxie of this team, has been really impressive, because that ultimately is what's been winning these games.
And when you talk about, like, having methods that are repeatable, I almost look at it and say, like, I feel like this team can get better, right? Because you have Race Thompson, who came back against Michigan State, played limited minutes, but you still have Xavier Johnson hurt. I feel like, you know, Indiana, and maybe this is me just being overly optimistic after the last three games from an Indiana perspective, but it feels like this team can continue to get better. And, you know, if you look at, to me, one of the most impressive things this last three-game stretch is just the way that Indiana's handled adversity. You know, it felt like this was a turning point in the season where Indiana could basically just fold and, you know, kind of throw. You know, Mike Woodson said, I think he's been a part of teams where, like, they just kind of decide, all right, well, let's just pack it in, and that's going to be the season. And it's pretty obvious that Indiana wasn't going to let that happen. And, you know, Trace Jackson Davis talked to the team and basically said, let's just take it one game at a time. This is leading up to the Wisconsin game. And I think really what has been striking too is that just the way that Indiana's defense has kind of gotten back to the form that it did last season, and how quickly they've been able to do that, how bad it was against Penn State and Northwestern, and then how good it was against Wisconsin, how good it was, you know, against Illinois. So I think when you look at the backbone of the team, I know I'm kind of rambling on here, but the fact that Indiana's defense seems to really be back to the level that it was last season, I think, is really encouraging as something that you can count on, at least it seems like, on a consistent basis now.
And listen, I mean, you know, I mean, I think we've been quick to say the season wasn't over after the three-game losing streak. It's not over after the three-game winning streak. There is an extent to which, like, Penn State might just be the outlier we look at and say, well, every once in a while you get shot out of the gym. Like, every once in a while it just breaks down. I mean, Penn State did the same thing to Illinois. You know, we can go kind of up and down, you know, even kind of the top end of the Big Ten, and find examples of teams that just kind of, like, just had basically a bad night defensively. Tom Izzo might feel that way about Sunday's game. But I think your point is very valid. I mean, Wisconsin, obviously Wisconsin's challenged right now. But Wisconsin is Wisconsin is in a is only scores 0.717 points per possession. Illinois is under 0.95. Michigan State is higher at, and this is adjusted per Ken Pomeroy, at 1.025. In fairness, I think some of that is game state and Michigan State trying to open the game up a little bit to come back because they were playing from behind for a lot of the second half and Indiana kind of being comfortable at that pace. It's worth saying, again, I've said it many times, Indiana is playing at the fastest tempo in the league right now. They are comfortable at that speed in a way that they just flatly weren't a year ago. But I think the defense is the as much as people want to talk about Jordan Geronimo's points and rebounds against Illinois and Wisconsin, or what Tamar Bates did against Michigan State, what Trey Galloway did last week, obviously Trace Jackson Davis, who we will come on to talk about during this podcast. The defense was the thing that really, I think, was going to take time to adjust for the guys you didn't have. Race Thompson being your best sort of wing defender, your best hybrid 3-4 defender. Xavier Johnson being far and away your best ball pressure defender. And when you think about this defense and the way that it's built, this is an oversimplification. Most things are. But it's essentially pressure the three-point line and the rim and just kind of live with the in-between. Xavier Johnson was the person who set that pressure at the perimeter. Losing him, it was going to take time to get guys more comfortable doing that. And also, I think the other thing is, to be fair to Mike Woodson, who I think has adjusted a little bit in the last couple of weeks, to sort of get the mountain to come to Muhammad a little bit in terms of saying, okay, the system has to be tweaked because we don't have these guys. Now, maybe if they're fully healthy by the end of the year, maybe Indiana returns to some of what it was doing in November and December. But I think that when you know, people always want to say, well, just find a way. Guys are hurt. You've just got to find a way to overcome that. Well, number one, sometimes there isn't a way. Number two, when there is, it's not like you can just flip a switch and just say, well, now it's not this, it's that. We figured it out, no problem. You're going to have to go through some trial and error to figure out, well, this is what he can do if suddenly we need him to play 26 minutes and stay out of foul trouble and impact the game at both ends of the floor instead of playing 15 minutes and he doesn't have to worry quite so much about his fouls and we don't need him to score quite as much. And it just feels like Indiana has gotten more of that. And, you know, if Mike Woodson were here, he might say, well, that's also where the offense has come from because good defense turns into good offense and gives you confidence and yada, yada, yada. But I think that that's the area that defensively, that is the area where it felt like Indiana was going to need the most time to sort of adjust without the injured guys. And that's, I think, a little bit more of what we've seen the last two or three games.
I think Trey Galloway is a big part of that. Just the energy and intensity he brings as a perimeter defender and the way that he can just like rip through screens, the way he gets around screens, tracking guys. And not only, you know, what he's, you know, it felt like after the Northwestern loss that when Trace Jackson Davis had a really good game, Jalen Hood, Schifino had a really good game, but obviously IU loses. It felt like with the guys that were injured, Indiana needed some of those guys that were role players before, i.e. Trey Galloway, Tamar Bates, Jordan Geronimo. It felt like if they were going to be able to stay afloat and maybe even thrive without, without Race Thompson, without Xavier Johnson, that those guys needed to take on a bigger responsibility. And at the time of the Northwestern game, and at the time of the Penn State game, you know, it felt like in large part those guys weren't ready. And I think the last few games we've seen, look, Trey Galloway had 17 points against Michigan State. Tamar Bates had 17 points against Michigan State. Tamar Bates, 5 of 6 from 3. Trey Galloway, 3 of 3 from 3. I don't know if that's sustainable, but to me, that's an indication that those role guys that needed to be more than role guys are starting to fill that mold. And I think that if you look even further down the line and talk about, okay, can Indiana get Xavier Johnson back? Can Indiana get a full Race Thompson back? Then I think that pays dividends down the road of now you have guys with experience playing bigger roles and allowing them to grow. So maybe if Xavier Johnson is back and has a bad game, then Trey Galloway will be more ready to be able to put up 17. And you know, Tamar Bates. And I also want to mention Tamar Bates' daughter. I mean, what a comeback that was at the halftime baby race. She was down big early, and whoever the baby was that was leading just decided to sit down, which was a bold strategy. I think that might go back to some coaching.
Babies do that.
Yeah. I probably did that, so I can't fault them too much. But it was a good day for the Bates family. It was. But the point is, I feel like, and I didn't really touch much on Jordan Geronimo here, but I feel like the role players that needed to take on bigger responsibilities the last few games have done so in pretty convincing fashion.
I'm also sort of, I'm also interested in, again, just talking about sort of overall team performance. Like, you know, Wisconsin is obviously the best defensive performance. Wisconsin is pretty offensively challenged right now. But Stephen Crowell averaged something like 16 points per game in the previous six before he got to Bloomington. And he scored 5 points on 2 of 8 shooting. You go to the Illinois game, Terrence Shannon goes off on you. He has 26. But only one other Illinois player scores in double figures. Then you get to Michigan State. Joey Hauser got loose early and scored. I mean, he had 22 for the game. I think 13 of those came in about the first 8 minutes. So the point is you clamp down on him. A.J. Hogar didn't score from the field until there were like 2 minutes left or 3 minutes left. Indiana's doing a good job of, you know, it even if you look at, I mean, Shannon's numbers were good in that Illinois game, but you felt like he disappeared for long stretches of it. And then he'd kind of have this burst where he'd reappear and he'd score like 8 points in, you know, 6 or 7 possessions. And then he'd disappear again. And you'd sort of look at it and say, well, that's the guy Illinois needs to sort of build its comeback around. And he keeps fading out of the game. Indiana's doing a good job of sort of isolating the player that, like, Wisconsin needed Stephen Crowell to play well in that game to win. And Indiana took him away. Michigan State, I would argue, needed A.J. Hogard or maybe Tyson Walker, who only had 8 points. In that game to play well to win. Joey Hauser, yes, gave them a lift early, but ultimately, that as good as Hauser is, that's not the player who sustains you if you're Michigan State. And then Illinois, you kind of, yes, Shannon got 26, but number one, he really was kept quiet when Indiana was building its lead. And number two, it did feel like even as he was scoring, Indiana was keeping him isolated within Illinois' offense. My point is Indiana is doing a good job of almost just sort of, coming back to that word, isolating the player, the one or two players an opponent sort of can't live without playing well, and either just taking them away, just removing them from the game from an impact perspective, or at least not letting whatever they get going really affect their team. And that is the sign of, at least in my experience, a team that is well prepared, but a team that is also very sharp to its, you know, its details, its game plan. And this was a team that, talking about Indiana, even when things were going a little bit better in November and December, we were still saying we don't feel like we've seen that defense from Indiana that we saw a year ago, where you just had to work so hard to get a good shot. You had to, like, I mean Indiana was one of the lowest ranked teams in the country in opponent possession length, and still is. They're dead middle of the Big Ten in Big Ten games alone, but the 278th nationally in opponent possession rank, you had to go so deep into the clock to get a good shot against Indiana. We didn't feel like we had seen that sharpness defensively. It feels like there's a little bit more of that now, and it's reflecting itself in the way that Indiana's, in particular, taking away players that opponents need to sort of be cornerstone pieces for them in the game.
And on the opposite end of that, I feel like other teams haven't been able to neutralize Trayce Jackson-Davis recently. When you look at, okay, Indiana's able to kind of limit what other teams' best or better players are doing, I feel like, you know, Indiana's opponents aren't able to neutralize Trayce Jackson-Davis. You look at how Illinois guarded him, that was different. Or, you know, Michigan State guarded Trayce Jackson-Davis differently than Illinois did, and he torched both of them. And I think Trayce Jackson-Davis, it feels like Indiana's offense has kind of found their formula. And I feel like this was kind of the way that it needed to be last season. And maybe we saw stretches of this, but I feel like we've seen a lot more of it this season, where basically Trayce Jackson-Davis is Indiana's point guard. And obviously, physically, he's not, but metaphorically, he is, because it feels like getting the ball to him in the post is kind of setting up Indiana's offense. letting him make decisions, whether that be if there's no double coming, he's probably going to torch someone in the post or dunk on Joey Hauser's head. That was in transition. But and then kicking out. I mean, Indiana shot against Michigan State 60% from three. And a lot of that came from Tamar Bates and Trey Galloway. But you don't – if you get Miller Kopp going, it doesn't need to be Tamar Bates. If you get, you know – Jordan Geronimo going from three, he hit one. He was one for one. Then you don't need you need someone or a couple of guys basically to be able to knock down shots on the perimeter when Trace Jackson Davis is kicking him out. But I think it feels like as much as maybe any time that Trace Jackson Davis, it feels like Indiana's offense is really is revolving around him and playing off of him really good, because now not only is he making really good decisions, is he making really good passes, but Indiana is hitting shots from the outside when he kicks it out. And I think when you just talk about Indiana being a more potent offensive team, which we've seen for stretches this season, and now you put that together with the improvement Indiana's defense has made over the last few games, it's a team that is kind of starting to put it together on both ends of the floor.
Let's talk about Trace Jackson Davis. I don't, you know, getting 15 minutes into a sort of current events IU basketball podcast without talking about him feels almost irresponsible. He's averaging 24.3 points, 13.3 rebounds, 4.7 assists, and 3.7 blocks per game since the Big Ten restart. As of Sunday, I haven't looked up these numbers yet, but as of Sunday I haven't looked up these numbers since the Sunday games, if there were any Sunday games. I think there were. But since Saturday night, anyway, he was third in the league in scoring, third in rebounding, 11th in assists, and first in block shots. If you look at KenPom's numbers, he's third in the league in percentage, and this is in conference games alone, the KenPom numbers specifically. He is third in the league in percentage of minutes played, fourth in percentage of possessions used. He is ninth in offensive rebounding percentage and first in both block rate and defensive rebounding percentage. Remarkably, he is sixth in assist rate. Right now, he is assisting 28.6% of made baskets while he's on the floor. I've used this stat a few times already, but for context, Yogi Ferrell's senior year when he led Indiana to a Big Ten championship, his assist rate in Big Ten play was 27%. Now, obviously, that was an 18-game sample. This is an 8-game sample. But right now, Trace Jackson Davis is assisting a higher percentage of baskets while he's on the floor in, frankly, an offense that doesn't make as many shots, you know, in terms of just total tonnage of them, than Yogi Ferrell did in 2016. Trace Jackson Davis's offensive rating, according to Ken Pomeroy, is at an all-time high, both in conference play and overall. And it's basically because of everything else he's doing. He's shooting the free throws like a little bit better. He's finishing about where his career numbers are. But the way he has embraced the idea that at both ends of the floor, he can control the game. At both ends of the floor, he can be the player. And this is one of those things that sounds a little bit homer for somebody, for the IU beat writer, for the Indianapolis Star, to say, maybe more than any other player in the conference, maybe even more than Zach Edey, because of his passing. He can run the game in basically any sense. Indiana's been putting him in the high post offensively and just sort of letting the offense run around him and just letting him pick what he wants to do. He's gotten better, I would say, sort of 5 to 8 feet in the last, you know, 18 months or so, which sort of negates the need for a right hand, because if you can shoot from 6 feet, then you can't really pin, you know, if somebody wants to pin you to your left hand, they kind of need you around the rim to do it. If you can shoot from 6 feet, even though it's not a true jumper, you can create that space. He's gotten really good with that hook shot. I think his footwork is better, and I think that's also, I think he's gotten better at, that is Rebel, excuse me, Rebel, calm down, or you're going to have to leave. He has gotten better with his footwork, which I think has also negated the sort of right-hand, left-hand dominant thing. And the other thing he's done, I mean, like I watched the Michigan State game back. The number of times Indiana comes down the floor and doesn't even really run a set, they just give him a post entry, and then they spread the floor around him. And basically, because he is playing so well right now, they just force Michigan State to show their hand. And, you know, I mean, Tamar Bates gets two threes where all that happens is Jalen Huchefino gives Trace Jackson Davis a right side post entry. And then just cuts through the lane. Tamar Bates takes up one wing. Miller Kopp takes up the other wing. Michigan State digs, and he just throws it out to Bates, who steps into a three. And it's the easiest thing in the world. He had a dunk on Jackson Kohler in the first half right after Bates hit a three that basically, I forget who was, I think it was Jason Whitens, was guarding Bates and had just seen Bates hit a three when Trey Holloman tried to dig and double. So he didn't, and Trace Jackson Davis just went around Jackson Kohler for a dunk. It just, I mean, Indiana is running games through him. Defensively, we know what he is, and he's playing at, you know, maybe the best rate of his career in terms of blocks, in terms of rebounds, etc. Offensively, Indiana's running things through him like a point guard, and he's playing like a point guard in terms of his distribution and the way that, that teams play off of him. And so it's not just the numbers, and it's really easy for people like me to make jokes and be critical of someone like Brad Underwood and say, well, why didn't you double him? Well, Michigan State doubled him, or at least tried some. That wasn't a hard double. It wasn't like the minute he touches the ball, go double him, because you can't do that anymore because Indiana can make shots. So what you try to do is stuff like you try to dig him. You try to, you know, you try to get there when you feel the move coming or whatever. But then this is what happens is Tamar Bates gets five threes. Trey Galloway gets three threes. So suddenly that's not working anymore. My point is, he is controlling games at a level that I have not seen, frankly, any Indiana player in my 15 years around this program play. And I really don't know right now in his current form. And given the fact that he was hurt and to hear him tell it has gotten healthy, I don't know how you defend him.
And yeah, I mean, to that point is that he hasn't really been healthy, it seems like, for most or the entirety of the season. He's dealt with the back issue, and he has said that he has improved just how he's feeling physically. But just looking at the intangibles of what he brings, I think it was after a few games ago, he was basically asked, like, how do you feel physically? And he said he's going to play, like, he's in there getting treatment, and he's going to play. And I felt like that was a really good representation of just, like, his leadership, the intangibles that he's bringing. And a lot has really built up to this point in his career for him. Like, if you look, I mean, he was an Archie Miller recruit, Indiana Mr. Basketball. There were a lot of opportunities over his career at Indiana for him basically to just say, okay, I'm going to move on, and I'm going to try my way professionally. After Archie Miller was fired, he stuck with the program. He waited out to see who they were going to hire. Mike Woodson gets hired. He sticks with them. You know, after last season, he, you know, enters the NBA draft without, you know, while keeping his eligibility. And COVID was a factor in basically him coming back because he wasn't able to go to the NBA draft combine. But the responsibility that he's taken and basically saying, like, I want to help do as much as I can to help Indiana achieve its goals, to help get Indiana back on top, I think is really admirable. And now obviously this is more of just like the intangibles, the things that I guess can't really be as quantifiable, but he's basically been everything that you would want out of an Indiana player. I mean, maybe minus him not really developing a jump shot, but just the way he carries himself, the way that he represents the program, I think that is worth noting as much as what he's doing on the floor.
It's interesting, and I brought this up in Talking Points, in my Talking Points column on Monday. And I know how this sounds. I hate saying this out loud because it sounds so big time, but sounds like I'm trying to big time people. But I got a chance to sit down with him in the preseason. And, you know, he didn't call anyone out by name, but it was obviously clear, you know, sort of what or who he was talking about. When he said that one of the big changes he'd seen in himself was essentially – that in his first 2 years, he never felt like he was pushed that much to do more. That there was almost kind of this attitude of, you're getting this, you know, you're getting your 18 and 10. That's enough. You're doing enough. That's enough. And it wasn't until Mike Woodson came in and said, like, but you need to do more. You can do more. You can be a better rim protector. You can be a better passer. You can be a better leader. You can work harder. You can set a better example. You know, that was when he kind of went up a level, so to speak, in terms of, you know, in, to hear him tell it anyway, his work ethic and how much time he put in and how much more he tried to hold people accountable and things like that. And I mean, like, it, listen, his next block is going to give him the all-time record, you know, the all-time IU record. He is now, I'm just like looking at the, he's going to be the first Hoosier since Yogi Ferrell with his next basket to break 1,900 points in not too long in the future, again, assuming he stays healthy and he keeps playing at roughly this this clip. He's going to break 2,000 points, first to only the sixth Hoosier to do that, and the first since A.J. Guyton. Where's he at? He's at 959 total rebounds. Alan Henderson's program record is 1,091. So he's on pace to break that before the end of the season or right around the end of the regular season. He's averaging 10.1 rebounds per game. He's going to set career bests in assists this season. You know, he's shooting better at the free throw line than he ever has. All this is just a sort of flowery way of saying it was interesting then to sort of hear him be so honest about kind of his own shortcomings and, you know, sort of basically saying, no one ever challenged me, so I didn't challenge myself. Now I am, and I think I'm going to be a different player. And in his senior year, you are seeing him not just, you know, to your point, yeah, he could have left, or he could have just sort of played out the string. I mean, he could have just had a nice career and you know, left top 15 in scoring, top 10 in rebounds, top 8 in rebounds, top 5 in blocks, won a lot of games, maybe made a couple NCAA tournaments. He has gone to a place that, again, you know, if we're talking about, obviously, players at programs like Indiana will always be remembered in part for what they win. That's inevitable. So does he win a Big Ten? Does he win a Big Ten tournament? Can he get to a Final Four? Something like that. But in terms of individual careers, and assuming he stays healthy, assuming, A, this is his last year, because he has talked like it is, but he does have one more if he wants it, and NIL can complicate those conversations, and that's all speculation right now. But assuming, A, this is his last year, and B, that he stays healthy for the duration of it and generally keeps producing like this, you know, we are talking about a player who is one of the all-time greats. I mean, is a generational player, is certainly as good of a big man as I've ever seen at Indiana, as productive, as sort of comprehensive in his skill set of a big man as I've ever seen at Indiana. And he is going to leave his name in the record books accordingly.
And I think you look at, too, possibly, like, what are the ripple effects of Trayce Jackson-Davis? And what I mean by that is younger guys that have been able to practice with him, to, you know, watch him, like a guy like Jordan Geronimo. And you know, I want to touch on him a little bit, because the way that he has kind of started to emerge was validation for why there was an expectation, or at least a hope, that he could be a breakout player this season. And if you look at the Northwestern game, at the Iowa game, he just looked totally out of sorts. You know, I think there was a lot of concern to, like, it doesn't really look like he has developed much since his freshman season. And I think that was, given that Race Thompson was out, that was like, you need him and probably Malik Renew were the two biggest guys to try to fill in that absence. And then Jordan Geronimo, I think he starts to put it together against Penn State. And then he has a good game against Wisconsin. And then he plays well against Illinois. And you see why, because he has the physical gifts, but also just he looks so much more comfortable these last few games. And I think what the difference has been is that he's playing with the same energy, a similar energy that he has his entire career. He's always been a really high energy guy that his athleticism allows him to do just things that are not normal on the basketball floor. But now he's playing with that similar energy, but the mistakes are being limited. You know, he seems much more comfortable in the flow of the game. He seems like he's shooting it from the perimeter with a lot more comfort and rhythm, and being able to, you know, I think his skill set probably more so than Race Thompson fits in with being able to play alongside Trayce Jackson-Davis, because I think Jordan Geronimo can stretch the floor a lot better than Race Thompson. So I, you know, if you look at, well, where does Indiana go forward, you know, I think pairing him with Trayce Jackson-Davis, if he can sustain, you know, basically what he's been doing the last few games, I think that's reason for optimism. I think Tamar Bates, it felt like he was kind of putting things together toward, you know, around the holidays, and then coming out of that break, he kind of wasn't playing up to that level, disappeared a little bit, and then you have what he did against Michigan State. And I think, you know, maybe if you don't get Jordan Geronimo and Tamar Bates to that fully breakout, you know, season, if you can get them close and you can put the pieces around Trayce Jackson-Davis, maybe you can get Xavier Johnson back, maybe you can get Race Thompson, you know, back closer to what he was before he got injured. To me, it feels like a pretty complete team. And obviously, there's still a lot of season to play. There's still a lot of things that could go wrong or could go right. But I think that it's getting much closer to the team that could be, that could at least play like a Big Ten contender than play like a bubble team, which was kind of the opposite of what we saw against Northwestern and against Iowa and against Penn State. But I feel like, you know, now it's about sustaining. I feel like Indiana's kind of flipped the switch, going towards the right direction. Now it's about just continuing that momentum.
I guess looking forward, then, you know, this feels like a crucial stretch in a way. Four of Indiana's next five games are against KenPom top 40 teams. They've got the game at Minnesota Wednesday night, which is kind of the only, and has been, to be fair, for a while, the only real sort of don't lose game left on the schedule. Basically, once they cleared the non-conference, like Minnesota. I mean, you could even sort of live with it. Like, it's a bad loss, but it's on the road. It would be much more damaging if it were at home. But it's just not something you want to have around your neck. Then you've got Ohio State at home, Maryland away, and Purdue and Rutgers at home. That's meaningful because then four of your next five games are on the road. This is kind of a make hay while the sun shines moment for Indiana these next 2.5 weeks. Again, Minnesota and Maryland are manageable road games. I'm not saying Indiana has to win both, but even splitting them I think would be meaningful. Ohio State, Purdue, Rutgers at home. Can you count on going 3-0? No. Is it possible? I think it is, particularly given, I mean, you've already beaten North Carolina at home. You've already beaten Michigan State at home. You beat Illinois on the road. You beat Xavier on the road. You've shown that you can compete at that kind of level. I think an optimistic projection for Indiana here would be 4-1 in these five games, based on how we've seen them play for the last week and a half. But there's kind of two things to that. Number one, I do think that's possible, but I would say it's optimistic. I wouldn't say it is likely. And number two, what it relies upon is that consistency you talked about, which is this, you know, again, when Indiana lost three in a row, we said a three-game losing streak doesn't end a season, but a three-game winning streak doesn't make a season either. This is, you know, the last, what, 10 days are valuable for Indiana if this is what Indiana can sustain for most of the rest of the year. And they'll have a bad performance here. They'll lose another game. You know, they're not going to win all the way through to Houston. But can they be this more often than not? Because if they can, then I think you can. I don't think it is absurd to look at that five-game stretch, maybe even throw in Michigan away and Northwestern away after that, and say that seven-game stretch, you could go 5-2. That would leave you 9-6 in the conference with 5 games remaining. 3 of those 5 would be at home. It just feels like between now and February 7th, again, 3 home games, 2 road games. The 2 road games are more manageable. And the 3 home games are all high-quality wins on your tournament resume because for reasons passing understanding, Ohio State's net ranking is still very strong. This just feels like a time where Indiana's sort of – they've got some momentum. They've had some success. They need to ride this at least through the next kind of 2.5 weeks and give themselves as much cushion as they can going into a difficult stretch in February.
I'm curious, some of the matchups coming up in the near future, you know, you look against Minnesota, a guy like Jamison Battle, who's going to get the assignment on him? Is that going to be a Miller Kopp assignment? You know, is Jordan Geronimo going to get that assignment? But, you know, like you've been saying, of being able to check some of the other team's better players, like, can they shut down Jamison Battle? Then you look for Bryce Sensabaugh has been a really, really good freshman for Ohio State, and Ohio State has been struggling as a team, but they also have talent. You know, they also have the potential to be good. So can you shut down Bryce Sensabaugh? And I think the one that probably a lot of people are circling is Trace Jackson Davis versus Zach Edey when IU plays Purdue. Two of college basketball's giants, metaphorically and physically speaking. But, you know, look, last season, Trace Jackson Davis had an off game against Purdue. Indiana still wins, but he got in foul trouble really early. How basically does that matchup play out? You know, we've seen what Zach Edey's been able to do this season, and it's been very impressive. Trace Jackson Davis is, I don't know if he's rivaling him for in the Big Ten Player of the Year conversation, but he's certainly making noise in it, I would say. But just some of those matchups, you know, can Indiana win some of those individual matchups? And I think, too, when you're just talking about sustaining, I think a lot of it, too, is just going to be Indiana's role guys. The guys that I've met, like Tamar Bates, Jordan Geronimo, those are some of the guys that I feel like have represented basically Indiana's inconsistency over the last season and into this season. That you need maybe not all of those guys, but a couple of them, one or two, at least to on a night to be able to sustain what they've been doing. Are they going to continue basically looking like that breakout player that people expected and hoped for? Or are they going to kind of go back to being, man, he just looked kind of out of sorts? I think those guys, those role guys, are going to play a big part in that. Can Trey Galloway continue to play at a high level? Can you get Miller Kopp? Maybe, I mean, he's talked about basically playing his role, but can you get a little bit more out of him? Can you get him making a couple of threes a night? You know, I think as much as Trace Jackson Davis is going to carry the team, and I think that he will, you know, should he stay healthy, I think that you basically, to sustain this, what Indiana has been doing the last few games, you need the sum of the parts.
Again, Indiana on the road at Minnesota Wednesday, home, I think the last weekend night game, if I'm not mistaken. It's an 8 p.m. game on Fox. That Michigan State game will be 4:30, Purdue's at 4. I think Illinois is an afternoon game. It is. It's a noon game. So this is Indiana's last kind of big ticket. I guess Rutgers counts too. I mean, that's a 6:30 tip, but I think that the other thing I keep coming back to, and I've mentioned this, I think, on our podcast, I know I've mentioned it when I've talked to other people about this, Indiana's last conference home game on a weekend last year was February 5th. This year, they've already played Michigan State at home on the weekend, Wisconsin at home on the weekend. They'll also play Ohio State, Purdue, Illinois, and Michigan, all weekend home games. And that's meaningful when you've got a home court advantage like Assembly Hall, because fans can plan their entire day around it. You don't have Kelly exams pulling some students away. You don't have Indy people saying, we don't want to have to fight the traffic, or we don't want the kids to get home late from a 9 p.m. or whatever. Everybody can plan their entire day around that. And the people that won't want to come down for an 8 p.m. Saturday game will sell their tickets to somebody who will. again, this is just one of those things where if you're Indiana, especially right now, beat Minnesota, then come home, seize your chance against Ohio State. Suddenly you're 6-4, you're 15-6, you're riding high again, and this is one of those places I have seen it. We've both seen it in the negative sense, where if it starts to recede, there's almost an acceleration that doesn't exist in other places. The flip side is if you make people feel like they're sort of on the journey, if they feel like they're on the march with you a little bit, suddenly those weekend home games in particular become the kind where the arena can account for 5 to 7 points by itself. And then suddenly you're beating Illinois at home, you're beating Purdue at home, you're beating Michigan at home, you're picking up, you're eating your way through a conference that is just lots of quality. Maybe not a ton of high quality, but lots of quad one and quad two pretty much everywhere. It really does feel like the next, I would say, 3 to 5 games are very important to kind of set the course for the rest of Indiana's season after that. He is Tyler Tachman. I'm Zach Osterman for the Indianapolis Star, the Bloomington Herald Times. Thank you so much for listening to Mind Your Banners here on Tuesday, January 24th, 2023, for Podcast Dog Rebel, Asleep on the Couch. We will talk to you again next week. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.